Okay, good. Please excuse the filming and stuff. We are. This is maybe a. I'm teaching a very famous book. It's called Lam Rim, and this is an ancient Tibetan custom. My teacher taught it to me for over 25 years, and it was written. This particular book was written by the teacher of the teacher of the Dalai Lama, who was my teacher's teacher. And it's sort of like a dummy's guide to enlightenment. It's recently we were printing something, and we bought some new printers because we thought we would save some money. We were printing this book, and so we bought printers because the printer wanted like a lot of money to print them, and we said, oh, we could do it cheaper. So we bought these new fancy printers. Then we thought, well, at the end it will be cheaper and we'll have a printer. And then, I don't know about you, but when I get those big boxes, they tape the instruction booklets to the top, and then I just tear it open and take it out of the box and try to figure it out. I don't read those things. If it's possible, Becky, it'd be good to sit down for you. Just for people, I don't know. As much as you can, as much as you guys can sit down, it'd be nice. But you don't have to if you have to run something. So anyway, then you know the printer doesn't work and you have to read the manual. And nowadays they make them in 16 languages, but there's a picture and the picture has a number. And you know, I'm really impatient, I just want to print the stuff. But I have to stop and slow down and look at picture number one, and it says open the box. And then this picture number two says read the manual, you know, and like that. So try to imagine a manual like that for the process of becoming enlightened. Okay? And that's what we're studying. Lam Rim means that. It means after 2,500 years. And in Buddhism didn't get less pure every century. It got more pure. And it got more clear. So Buddha was, you know, enlightened. He spoke in very high language. His students were almost enlightened. So when we read those books, it's like impossible. So what has happened over the centuries is that the teachings have gotten more and more clear. And then 1,000 years ago, a kind of literature was invented called Lam Rim. And it's the manual on top of the printer. And it just says, okay, number one, do this. Number two, do this. And if you just follow the instructions, by the time you get to the end, you will be enlightened. Okay? And that's the claim, and I believe it. And I was trained in it for many, many years. And I've taught a lot. I've been teaching for, I don't know, almost 40 years. But I wanted to pass on this transmission. In Tibet, it's considered important to pass on the blessing that I received from my teacher when my teacher taught this thing to me. So in my life, I would like to pass on these teachings. And then I would like you to pass them on to somebody else. That's my dream, is that I will teach you this manual, printer manual, and you will pass it on to the next generation. That's my hope. And that's, I really hope that you will do that. Okay. We spend a lot of time, we go around the whole world. Half of my time is spent going to 25 countries, 25 cities in the world and teaching people how to apply these principles in real life. You know, so we simplify them, we present them in a business context or relationship context or wellness context, but then I don't get to teach the real stuff or, you know, the original book. So 4 times a year, I take a vacation and for 10 days straight, I do it the old way. You know, and for me, it's very satisfying and it makes me really happy. So these are not, we're going to go deep into the subject, and the whole thing will take, I think, 14 years. We are on year number three, I think. Four. We're starting the fourth year, I think. Third year? I don't remember. Anyway, we got 12 years to go. And I'm just going slowly through the original. And to me, it's just really beautiful. Like, to me, it's the most beautiful thing in the world. I don't think everyone finds it that way. But for me, it is. And I'm following the original Tibetan text because I want that also to be recorded. At least, I was very fortunate that I met the great lamas from Tibet when they came out. They're dead now. They're gone. But I was trained by them. So I want to pass that on. I want it recorded for people who come in later generations. So that's why we have the cameras up. And I apologize. They'll be getting up and down and making sure they're not filming my right ear. And please be patient with that process, okay? I know it's not conducive when you're in a spiritual class to have someone jumping up and down, but I think it's important for later generations. And we have many groups in other countries and many students in other countries who, unfortunately, because of the American border policies, cannot come to these courses. Once a year, we do the course in Guadalajara, Mexico, largely so that friends from other countries like China or Argentina or Bulgaria, they don't have to go through this very unpleasant process of trying to get into this country and for a program, for a spiritual program. But we're filming it, and we're trying to do a good job filming it so that people in other countries who cannot get into this country for a spiritual program will have the chance to see them. Okay? So please put up with the camera stuff. It also irritates me, okay? Then we started this program. This is the seventh course, so it must have been... this is the fourth year. This is the beginning of the fourth year. And in the last 3 years, we went through a very deep part of the course. We went to the end for good luck. We went to meditation and how does reality work. And we covered those subjects. I'll be doing them again in 12 or 13 years. Inshallah, God willing. But in the meantime, we spent about, I think, a year and a half or 2 years on a thing called Jorcha. And that's, Jorcha means, Jor means to get ready for something or to prepare for something. And Cha means practices. So these are six traditional practices that a Buddhist in this tradition, the tradition of the Dalai Lamas, should do before a meditation session. There are six tricks you can use before you meditate that will throw you into a deep meditation immediately. And if you know them, you can have extraordinary experiences in meditation. They've been developed for 2,500 years. And the Buddha taught them originally. So we went through the six preparation tricks for getting into a deep meditation. During that 2 years of teaching, we often heard the author of this book, the teacher of the teacher of the current Dalai Lama, and my teacher's teacher, we heard him often referring to a song, a meditation song that his teacher had written called Jampel Thundup Gyatso. If you can't remember that, you can say Dakpo Rinpoche. Okay? Say Dakpo Rinpoche. Sometimes I'll ask you to repeat Tibetan because I want to teach it to you in your next life, okay? Dakpo Rinpoche. Okay. So Dakpo Rinpoche, the teacher of the author of this book, wrote a thing called the meditation song. And in that text, he wrote a song, verses of poetry, which could be sung before you do your meditation. So it's a pleasant way to do your warm-up or your six preparations for a meditation session in this book called The Meditation Song. So he kept referring to it, but he didn't explain it in detail. He just kept saying, as the song says, as the song says, but he didn't tell you the song. So I was getting frustrated personally, and I thought, well, let's stop for 10 days, let's stop for one session, and let's go study the song together. And then we'll go back to the main text. That's why it's going to take 14 years for this thing, because I'll keep adding new stuff. It's a beautiful, beautiful song. My teacher, his teacher was the Dalai Lama's teacher. The Dalai Lama's teacher wrote out, he was the editor of this, the main book we're studying for 12 years. And he would not teach us the higher Buddhist teachings unless we memorized the meditation song. He required us to memorize this song. He thought it was that important. And I can remember, I cooked for him for many years, and I would be standing in the kitchen making waffles or whatever, and I would recite it to myself while I was cooking. And so for me, it's very dear. I learned this when I was 23 or 24. I had to memorize it. So me and a team of friends, we spent the last, 6 weeks translating it. And then we we typed it out in Tibetan. People here typed it in Tibetan language. Other people checked it in Tibetan language. Other people put it into pronunciation in Western letters. And then other people translated it. And then a great team from Guadalajara. Our best students are from Guadalajara and Mexico City. But they worked really hard and they laid it out in Guadalajara, and then another team in Sedona spent 3 horrifying days, all day and night, printing it, lots of adventures, and then another team drove like 8 hours to get it to the printer and the binder, and so this book is finished. And it looks like this. We printed, because we were depending on the registration numbers, we started with 100 copies. And we just finished a 3-day, the first 3 days of this program were held at our university outside of Tucson. And the 100 copies went already. We were short. So we have a team which is going to print 50 more tonight and tomorrow, I guess. Right? Where are you, team? You can have 50 done by tomorrow night, or you think? Or Thursday night? You'll see. You'll try. Costco will try. Okay. And it's our dream to give it away. So we're just giving it away to whoever shows up. Okay? Can I just see a show of hands of people who would like a book? Because it would help us to... Nicole, can you do a quick count? Keep your hand up until your neighbor looks unhappy or... Cool. How many?
About 32.
Okay, good. So maybe we make 75 more or something. I don't know. Okay. All right. We'll try to get it to you by tomorrow night or at worst by Thursday. Okay. And Scott and Orit have kindly prepared some traditional Tibetan cloths, book cloths, to wrap the books in. Do you have more for... Do you have, like... Okay, good. Okay. It's a tradition to wrap a book, an important book, in cloth in Tibet, so that when you sit on the ground to do your meditation and you set it down in front of you, the book isn't touching the ground, which is considered... disrespectful in a country where yaks are pooping all over. Got it? All right. It's a beautiful, beautiful text. So what I'd like to ask is if people could show it to their neighbor if the neighbor doesn't have one, okay? Or share. you know, just sort of try to make sure everybody can look at one, okay? This is a test of your Buddhistness. Also, those of you, we have added 20 pages of blank paper at the end. That's so that you can take notes, okay? And so that the notes are forever connected to the book. And that's because it's your, in Tibet, it's considered your responsibility to pass this book on to the next person, to teach it to the next generation, maybe even translate it into Spanish and print it. So, or whatever you're from. So, in our lineage, it's considered important that you take good notes and you be ready to pass it on to the next person without much loss in the transmission. Okay? So I'm asking you to take careful notes, especially if you are teachers. And if I'm sorry we don't have enough copies, but if you have a copy, take the notes in the copy so it will always be with you. Okay? If you've given up your copy, then take notes on a piece of paper and glue it to the book later or something, okay? But I really want you, by the end of the week, to have a copy which is complete in its notes, okay? Because you have to teach it to the next generation. When you are teaching other people to meditate, this is the best place to start. You start with these six things, okay? That's a very ancient tradition. We don't believe that you can meditate without doing these six preparations. Okay, that's just our lineage. Okay, now, then I had an idea that it would be nice this week. This is meant to be a celebration. This meditation song is meant to be a celebration. And if you read it through, you can feel that it feels like a dance, or it feels like a song, or it feels like a poem. It is a poem. And there's a tradition in Tibet to actually dance out parts of this, or to sing out parts of this, or to do a drama performance, or trapeze is going to come here. And what I would like to do this week, most of you heard about it, during the evenings, I will go through this thing in 10 classes. We're on the fourth class tonight. We did 3 classes at our university. So we will have 7 more classes, including tonight. And I will go through it, all the important ideas in this meditation song, okay? But during the afternoons, in the mornings, we'll have our traditional meditation session, 1 hour. And then we'll do a traditional yoga class for 1 hour. And then we'll have lunch. And then in the afternoon, we'll have 2 sessions called creativity groups. And the creativity group means I would like us to go through this song and interpret it in dance, in video, in poetry, in song, in guitar, in rock guitar, in jazz, in funk, anything you would like to try, I would like you to be involved, okay? And then our plan is on Sunday, we will perform a long meditation song interpreted by this group, okay? And by the way, at Diamond Mountain, the 30 people in 3-year retreat, I almost said 30-year retreat, the 31 people in 3-year retreat, they will be doing their performance on the same day together. They will be interpreting the song through the eyes of 1,000 days of retreat that they've finished already, okay? So that's kind of cool. We'll be doing it at the same time. So the idea is, if you're interested in singing something, then you sing. And if you're interested in playing guitar, you play guitar. If you can't do anything, lead a meditation. I always tell my teachers, we have 300 teachers around the world, I say, if you get stuck on the stage and you can't think of what to say, just start a silent meditation. And they'll think you know what you're doing, you know? So you always have this option. Or if you just prefer to advise or to help or to support, you're welcome to do that. If you're shy and you don't want to do something, God bless you. Just come. Don't feel nervous and just say, look, I can't do anything like that, but I can advise you of what looks good or how you sound or what might be better. Okay? I think, for example, Venerable Phil has some experience in choral singing. I personally sang in the church for 12 years, and I love choral singing. And I think it'd be wonderful if we had a small choral interpretation of some of the verses. So he's going to be in charge of that. I don't know what Osiris's plans are, but I think it'd be wonderful if somebody could film an interpretation this week in Phoenix of some of the verses and show it as part of the performance. And then it would be nice. I know Anatole plays very nice piano. And he could say, these parts fit a few songs that I'm really familiar with, and I think you would enjoy them. And then we have sort of a master putter-togetherer, which is Johnny O, and a few other people. And they will kind of try to get everything to flow together so it doesn't look like amateur night. Okay, so I'm going to teach you the fourth part tonight. And then as we go through this part, which is only one of the 10 parts of this week, I would like you to think, have in mind how you could see this done in a performance, you know? Like which parts that I cover tonight would go well as a dance, or would go well as a song, or would go well as a, I don't know, someone reading a piece of poetry from Hafiz, or something like that, okay? So as we go through tonight's lesson, I'm asking you, each of you, to try keep your eyes out for something that would be fun to interpret. And then I'll ask you at the end of the night, and you tell me, oh, that would go well as a dance. Or I could see that done to a Lady Gaga song that I know, or something like that. Okay? All right? Got it? All right. Here we go. I'm going to start on verse number 7. So I'll be referring to verses and not page numbers. Don't look at the bottom of the page. Look at the side of the page, and you'll see a number. So I'm going to just repeat this section. It's page 9 if you're interested. Verse 7, okay? Here we go. We've already completed the first two preparations for meditation. The first of those is to straighten up your room, straighten up the meditation space, and set up an altar. Altar means you can have a photo of your personal teacher. It could be your sixth grade teacher, could be your dog, could be your parents, could be your lama, and whoever, it could be your children. Put a photo there of who you believe in is teaching you. Put some kind of offering, a flower or something. The first step is clean your room, clean the meditation space, make it look nice, and then set up an altar. Step number 2 is, and put some offerings out, right? Sorry. Step number 2 is put the offerings on the altar, okay? Typically a flower or some water bowls or your favorite cookie, because you get to eat it after it's offered. And that's step number 2. Step number 3 is to prepare your meditation seat in the traditional way and take the traditional meditation posture. So we've covered those 3 already in the last 3 days. If you weren't there and you want the poop on that, then talk to Nick and Aaron. You ready? Raise your hands. And they can help refer you to someone who can give you a private transmission, okay? It's very important to know how to set up your meditation seat. It's important to know the traditional 7 points of posture in meditation. It's important to know those things. So if you missed the last 3 days, talk to Nick and Aaron, and or Rob and Esther. Where are you guys? Talk to them, and they can help you, okay? Don't be shy. During the break, we'll take a break, right, tonight? You hope. And during the break, don't be shy. I mean, you should know how to meditate. And there are certain traditional postures, ways to set up your seat, and things like that. You should know them, okay? Don't be shy. This is your chance. We're not covering this again for 15 years, okay? Part of the third preparation after you take your seat properly and sit down properly, which is shown with the little girl. Can you show me that? You guys got that? Yeah. She's in proper posture. Once you have prepared your body physically, you should prepare your heart for meditation. Okay? There's a warm-up. It's like running a race. You can't run a race without stretching your hamstrings, and you can't meditate without kunlong chupa. Kunlong chupa means preparing your motivation, okay? Setting your motivation for the meditation session. It's very similar to doing a yoga session. You know, you get a lot more out of it if you dedicate it to someone at the start and during Shavasana at the end. So I'm going to start covering tonight the traditional inner preparations for meditation. And there are two. There are two traditional meditations within. One is called going for shelter, okay? Protection. Like, I like to call it the umbrella, you know? It's not very relevant in Arizona, but if you lived in New Jersey, which is where I lived for a while, you have to have an umbrella. You carry around an umbrella all the time because sometimes you won't need it. Okay. So here we go. This is verse 7. This is a visualization that you do with your eyes closed. Okay. But you can sing it first and then close your eyes and visualize it. Okay. Don't forget, starting now, you are thinking, what would be a nice interpretation of this? Okay? And it doesn't mean you have to do it if you suggest it. You can say, someone who can dance should dance that one. Okay? Here we go. Standing before me in midair is a jeweled throne held aloft by 8 mighty lions. It is high and wide, and upon it sits a cushion of a multicolored lotus and the discs of the moon and sun. So in Tibet, the moon and the sun and the earth were thought to be discs, flat discs. And if you sailed too far off the disc, you would fall off. So the moon and the sun were... And by the word for that disc in Sanskrit is what? Mandala, okay? The word for that disc is mandala. Mandala means a disc. So we picture this holy being sitting on 2 cushions of the moon and the sun, all right? The moon represents compassion and love for other people, cool light, okay? The sun represents the burning power of a person's intellect who understands reality deeply, okay? So the moon is love and the sun is wisdom. And this being is sitting on them because this being has both of them, mastered both of them, okay? Next page. And you're going to see, can you put up the picture of the Buddha's hand? We have put photos in the book, which you're going to get, to remind you of what you're supposed to be thinking about at that point in the preparation for meditation. I'll read from the text. Upon the throne sits a holy being. Inside there are my heart Lama, who has been so kind to me. Outside there are the Buddha, lord of the Shakya clan, victorious one, with a body shining like molten gold. Their hair is tied up in a knot. They have one head and 2 arms. Their right hand presses the earth. their left hand is held in the gesture of meditation. So to prepare in this tradition, in this lineage, before you meditate, you picture in your mind an enlightened being. Okay, we use Shakyamuni Buddha. Okay, we use the Buddha. Why? To remember where these teachings came from. All right, and it's not that we are worshiping the Buddha. Okay, it's not like that. It's not that you have to be a Buddhist to do this preparation. We are not worshiping a person. We are recognizing who gave us these teachings, who granted us these teachings, okay? So traditionally we picture the Buddha, okay? And let's see. The eight lions have a meaning. I'm not going to go through it because it would take an hour, okay? And we don't have time. What I thought would be interesting to you is to tell you why the person you picture. By the way, if you have a teacher, if it could be your parents, I have a sixth grade teacher who was very important to me. I have other friends who I see as teachers. So you can picture this Buddha as them. That's okay. All right. It's important, because it's considered important that their right hand is hanging out over their knee and touching the ground, okay? And that's the picture you see here. That's called Sannin Chakya. It means, it has meaning. It's a mudra. It's a symbol of something higher. So when the Buddha is touching the ground with the right hand, it has a meaning. It means they have overcome certain demons or certain forces in the world. So I thought you'd like to know the four demons, okay? The reason the Buddha's hand is like that, and the reason whoever you picture as your teacher could have their hand on the ground, okay? Picture them as having their hand on the ground. Why? They are like pushing down four forces in the world which are negative. They have overcome those four negative forces, okay? Here they are. Number one. Sai Budu. This means getting distracted in your life, okay? Getting distracted in your life from the spiritual side of life, okay? You should have a job. You should have a career. You could have a family. A partner is considered very good in Buddhism. You should have a life. But you shouldn't ignore the spiritual side of life also. You should spend a certain amount of your life, your day, should be devoted to spiritual things. Because all life ends in death. And only the spiritual things can help you in the end. Okay, get ready for what will come. And don't spend all of your life only on your job and your family and things like that. Try to also pay attention to your spiritual needs. There was a custom in this country when I was a kid. I grew up in Phoenix. And Sunday was a very, what do you call it? It was a sacred day. It was like Shabbat in Israel. Friday night in Israel, right? People stop driving cars. If you drive a car around Jerusalem on Saturday, you get rocks thrown at the car in the old days by the Jewish people, not the Palestinian people. Okay, and it was sacred. Even when I was growing up in Phoenix, you go down Central Avenue and there's churches all the way down. I used to go to one of them for many, many years. And it was wonderful. Sunday was reserved for spiritual stuff. And they had blue laws. Blue law means you can't open a business on Sunday. So everyone was sort of forced to go to church or at least reflect on the spiritual side of their life. That custom has gone. It's changed. It's not really there anymore. But think about it. A certain part of your life should be reserved for spiritual things. It could be an hour every morning. It could be Sunday. But set aside some part of your life. You're very busy. Your work is very important. Your career is compelling. You know, but have the wisdom to set aside something to get ready for later, okay? And to, what do you call it? Recharge your life. To give your life meaning, okay? So if you don't do that, you have the demon of destruction. And if you can overcome that demon, then you can have your hand on the ground, your right hand. Okay, it means I take my Sundays off, thank you. I made Wednesday. I had a big career for 19 years. I was a big executive. But I took Wednesdays off. I closed my own immediate department on Wednesdays. I took off. And that was my spiritual day. And they couldn't buy it for... I didn't do anything on that day. I did my meditations and things. Take one day. Then you can hold your hand down. Okay? You beat the first demon. What's the second demon? Pungbudu. Pungbudu means mortal body, mortal coil, human body, flesh and blood body. Okay. In this life, during the course of your life, it's a worthy goal to overcome the mortal body. Okay? Can you overcome a body of flesh and blood? Okay? I mean, in the Christian tradition, Jesus did that, right? Overcame the blood and bone and flesh and body. In the Buddhist tradition, we are all meant to do that in our lifetime. During our lifetime, we should meditate, we should learn practices that will take us to the body of an angel. Okay? On the day that you reach that, you can hold your right hand on the ground and say, I beat demon number two. I am no longer locked into a physical body which will die and get old. Okay? It's sort of a race against time. Okay? The body's quite good at falling apart like an old car. And as each year goes by, more and more parts will fail or get old or worn out. I'm starting a honeybee hive this year, I hope. I bought the hive. I'm trying to get the bees. You have to buy them. They are $90 for 3 pounds, which is 10,000 bees. And that's enough to start a hive. And then you have to go out and dump them into the hive, which is fun. And I was reading, you know, so my approach is to read every book about beekeeping. The worker bees, they only live for 6 weeks. You know, in the summer, at the height of the hive, there are 60,000 bees are born out of the 10,000 bees in the start of the spring. And then they go out and collect honey. And I think each teaspoon of honey takes 10,000 flowers or something like that. Each bee in their lifetime will make 1/12 of a teaspoon of honey. And they will fly for 6 weeks, and they will fly their wings off, and they will kill themselves to feed the new bees. You know, they will die on the ground, and they won't be able to get back to the hive, and they will freeze, or they'll starve. And all honeybees are that way. They fly their wings off, and they die within 6 weeks to serve the hive. You know. And they travel 6,000 acres, 2 to 3 miles every day, you know. And we are like honeybees. We live a little longer, but you will fly your wings off, okay? You are like that. We are like that. You will walk your legs off, and you will wear your hands off, and you will die, okay? Everybody does that, all right? So our practice is meant to transform the body before we die. If you master that through meditation, you can hold your hand on the ground. And then you've beat the second demon of this flesh and blood demon. Okay. Then you reach number three. Number three is you defeat the demon of death. Okay. You don't have to die anymore. Right? People say, I never saw anybody who didn't die. maybe you have to be a really good person to be able to see them. Okay? We believe that. We believe if we were good enough, we could see them. Okay? That's a long story. We'll talk about it. You don't want the pen again tonight. demon number four. Nyomongbe du means negative thoughts, desire, jealousy, anger, irritation. Mine is jealousy. I don't know. There are 84,000 negative thoughts in Buddhism. Okay. We all have some of them. The practice of Buddhism is meant to help you overcome those thoughts. If you practice well, then by the end, you are incapable of anger. You cannot get irritated with anybody. Okay? It's not possible. Or you cannot get jealous. Okay? You reach a point where you're beyond those things. Completely. The person who most irritates you, even if they put their heart to it and worked on it for 3 weeks, couldn't get you irritated. Okay? When you reach that point, you can hold your hand on the ground. And you have defeated the fourth demon. Okay? Remember, by the way, we are in the back of your mind, what are you supposed to be thinking about as we go through this? Yeah, how would I interpret that? Those four. You know, how would I, could I do a dance where I touch the ground and, you know, or could I show it in a film? In a 2-minute film, or could I show it in a photographic essay, or could I play a song that represents, okay? Keep that in mind, because that's what you have to do by Sunday. All right. We'll continue on. Well, let's pause here. Upon their left hand, this is verse 11. Rest a sage's bowl filled with the nectar of immortality. All right. That nectar is called what in Sanskrit? Amrita. Okay. People mispronounce it as amrita. I don't know why. It's amrita. Okay. Mirt comes from, came into English as mortuary, mortal. Ah means not. Okay. Amrita means nectar. Nek means death in Greek, necrophilia. Tar means to go beyond. Tara is the teacher who teaches us to go beyond. Nektar means amrita. Okay? They have a bowl in their left hand, and in that hand is nectar. Okay? Traditionally, there will be a gesture like this. This is called a mudra, a sacred gesture. Okay? There will be this gesture with their right hand. And then there will be a left hand, there will be a bowl of nectar, of immortality, okay? And in this visualization, at one point you will see your teacher like this, and they are holding a bowl of nectar. And then they say, this gesture, what we call a mudra, sacred gesture, this one means I'm teaching you, okay? This is the traditional gesture of teaching. When you see a statue or a painting that has the lamas like this, it means the lama is teaching. Okay, the right hand at the heart in this gesture means teaching gesture. And then in the left hand typically is a bowl of nectar. And they are connected. See what I mean? This gesture leads to this one. See, learning the sacred wisdom takes you to immortality. Okay, immortality, by the way, I mean, let's talk about immortality. Amrita, immortal, right? It's not like, I always used to think of like these terrible horror movies where somebody lived for 5,000 years and they got more and more wrinkled. And I mean, in my mind, I'm like, I don't want to be immortal, you know? Like, I would be more bald and more wrinkled and I don't want to live for 5,000 years. But it doesn't mean that. When you reach that state, your body turns to light. And then that body can go to different worlds and help many people. Okay? And that body can take any form. It can be a dog, it can be a cat, it can be a human, it can be a tree, it can be the ocean. See, that's a fun body. So don't think, I don't want this immortality stuff because it just means I get older. It's not like that. It's freedom from a form. And you can be anything you want that will help people. Okay? That's a metta. And the teaching leads to it. Okay? And there's a beautiful teaching on this also, that this gesture means, please study. Please learn this wisdom. Please learn the deeper things. Please learn the spiritual things, okay? Learn what you're supposed to be doing spiritually. And then this hand is on the Buddha's lap. You can see it in the picture. The left hand is on the Buddha's lap. That's a meditation gesture, okay? They're in meditation. The left hand means, do what I taught you. Practice it. The right hand means learn. The left hand means do it. Don't just learn, do it. Don't learn the meditation song. Learn it and then meditate, okay? Like, I have friends who have mastered this song and they don't meditate. The purpose of this song is to prepare you for meditation. So you gotta have both. You can't meditate without knowing how. And if you know how and you don't meditate, it doesn't count for anything. It's not going to help anybody. You got to have both. That's why Lord Buddha's hands are often like this, okay? And when you picture your own teacher at this point, you can have their hands like that, okay? You can be careful how you picture your teacher's hands and let them have meaning, okay? That's the point. All right. Those of you who are interested in how are we doing on time? If you're interested at this point in the original scripture, Pabon Kurpanche says there's a way you can interpret this image of the Buddha as including the four modes of a teacher, the four modes of a teacher, and he drops it. He says, "You figure it out." Okay, what are the four modes of a teacher or a good parent? Shi, ge, wang, tang. Okay, say shi, ge, wang, tang. Shi, ge, wang, tang. Shi, ge, wang, tang. Shi means a good teacher or a good parent should know how to be sweet to their student, smiley. You know, the Dalai Lama when he comes to the West. And not when he comes to my monastery. Okay? In the West, he's like, oh, you know, like very friendly and supportive and kind and warm. Okay, that's Shi. First mode of a good parent, first mode of a teacher. Second mode, Ge. Ge means generous, like outgoing, gets everybody involved, has a big waffle breakfast. You know, like everyone feels like, oh, I'm in this project, you know. Generous. I don't know how to say it. How do you call that? Effusive? Effusive? Like, just joyful. Joyful maybe, something like that. Like, let's have a party, you know. Let's have a Dharma party, you know. Let's stay up all night and print books on these printers that don't work, you know. And then you just have fun. That's the second mode, like a cheerleader mode, okay? Cheerleader mode. Second mode of a good parent, second mode of a good teacher. Wang, number three, powerful. When the Dalai Lama comes to our monastery, he's yelling at us the whole time. He's like a tough guy. He's push you. A good teacher pushes you, okay? You talk to those Olympic athletes, there's not one that doesn't have a good coach. And there's not one coach who didn't push them. You know, push them hard. The better the student, the harder you can push them. And then if they're not so good, you have to use the smiley thing, you know. You know, take them out to movies, you know, second one. But if they're a fine student, if they have a strong heart, you can push them. And those people have, what do you call that? Aptitude. Good raw material. Then the Lama should push them to make them more, okay. And it's not fun. It's hard. My teacher didn't say one good thing about me for 20 years. 25 years. I complained one day. My friends came from my workplace they said, we got to meet your teacher, you know, after like 10 years of working together. They're like, we want to meet your teacher. I said, okay, you can come to our house, but just be aware, he's never said anything good about me for the last 10 years, 20 years, you know. And then they went up to meet him, and I was all nervous, you know. They all came down, and I said, what do you say about me? And they said, he said you're the most wonderful student he ever had. I'm like, are you sure? You know, and he never ever said anything like that to me. So, I mean, if the student is strong enough, the lama should push them, like a good athlete. You should kick their ass, get them going, okay? So that, and a good parent should demand more of their child, if they're strong enough to take it, okay? Trak, okay, fourth mode. Trak means fierce. Fierce, like gets angry or pretends to get angry, okay? If you have a child who constantly crosses a dangerous street, there may be necessary a day when you spank them, okay? Same with a Buddhist student, okay? If they're strong enough, you know, and for number four, they have to be even stronger. They have to be really devoted, not to quit when you discipline them, okay? It may be necessary. If the student is close enough to you that you can discipline them severely, strongly, and they will rise higher, a good student will rise higher, okay? If you ask them, step number three, to do something very difficult and they fail or they give up, then you punish them, okay? And a good student will transmute into gold. At that point, they will become true gold. That process, the four stages, will make a golden student. And the same with an Olympic athlete, okay? The coach, my coach, I had a coach, I did rowing in college. I was in a boat that won the Henley the next year. I wasn't there. They won the Henley, my boat that I wasn't in. But our coach was ruthless. Our coach was brutal, you know. But after we won the Henley, we were like, you know, this is the Super Bowl of rowing. And, you know, we were like, our coach is, you know, Joe Schmoe, you know, and we won the Henley, you know. So a really good student can handle it, all four modes. Now, why am I mentioning these four modes? First of all, I think you'd make a cool dance or a cool song, or maybe someone could play four songs and they start out with smiley and they go to punishing mode. Okay. You think about it. I want something creative from all of us. Together, by Sunday, maybe someone interprets the four modes. When we get to the part about the Buddha's hands, okay, this part, verse, I don't know, 10, okay? When we hit verse 10, maybe someone could play four songs, or they could have four paintings up. You could paint something. You can do a poem, you know. You could go smack everybody. I don't know. Okay. But Pabongka Rinpoche's homework at this point is you figure out how this represents the four modes. You figure out how the Buddha is sitting itself, hidden in the way the Buddha sits, are the four modes. And he doesn't give us an answer. And I don't know what they are myself. Okay? All right? Okay. Let's go about 10 more minutes. I'll give you a break, okay? All right. And we'll have refreshments. Draped upon their... Verse 12. Draped upon their holy body are the robes of russet gold. Their body is adorned with the marks and signs of an enlightened being. Their body is made of crystal light. Next page. Their two legs are folded in the lotus posture, and they sit in the center of a mountain of light that pours from their own body. Around my lama sit my own personal teachers and the teachers of the lineage. When you picture the Buddha or whoever you picture, on the outside, they may be the historical Buddha. On the inside, they're always your personal teacher, your heart teacher, okay, in the form of a Buddha. If your teacher is a woman, you can picture Tara, okay? You can picture a white angel, okay? If it's your mother or your sister or your daughter, or your teacher is if your lama is a lady, then you can picture Tara, okay? Hands should be the same, right? They are surrounded by gatherings of close angels, Buddhists, Bodhisattvas, warriors and their angels, and protectors of the teachings, and the guardians as well. I think it'd be interesting if someone interpreted what it would be to be a guardian, okay? We're going to have to cut a lot of them, okay? We won't have time for 500 of them, but we'll see. Set in front of each of these holy beings is an exquisite cushioned stand, and upon each stand rests each of the teachings each teacher has ever given, the physical Dharma in the form of a book made of light itself, okay? Maybe someone could figure out how to make a painting of a book of light, or I don't know, or a video. See, that's your... You pick something which calls to you. Each person in this room should try to read through this book tonight and tomorrow and find something that calls to you. Like, I want that part. Okay? And then tomorrow we start fighting over the parts. Okay? 17, page 15. Each being in this garden of karma is extremely pleased with me. So when you visualize your teacher in front of you, by the way, they are in midair, okay? They are floating in midair before you. Traditionally, it's a little higher, like at the level of this chakra, and that's supposed to influence this chakra, okay? So they are here. You don't picture them down, you don't picture them up too high. Traditionally, they are floating in midair at the level of this chakra. And we call them the garden of karma, okay? Your teacher is a karma garden. Why? Huh? Yeah, it's where you can plant good karma, okay? Your teacher, meaning your mother who taught you, someone in school who taught you, a priest or a rabbi who taught you, someone who taught you your career, people who have mentored you through your life, these are very powerful karma. Anything you do to help them is extremely powerful karma, okay? So we call them karma garden, okay? Your mom is a karma garden, your dad is a karma garden. Whether you like them or not, it doesn't matter. Whether they were nice to you or not, it doesn't matter. They suffered to bring you into this world and they suffered to bring you up. So for you, they are karma garden. You can go there to that place and plant your flowers because that's powerful soil. Okay. I too am overwhelmed with they are extremely pleased with me. Okay. In this part of the visualization, you are supposed to imagine that this being who you are visualizing, again, it could be your mother or your lama or your sister, if they've been particularly inspiring to you, then in the visualization, you are supposed to imagine that they are like extremely happy. Like, they're just like, you know, like your mom on a good day, you know, she's like, you know. I had this thing, you know, when I was a kid in high school, they chose me to go to the White House and meet the president. I'm not even going to tell you which president because then you'll know how old I am. But okay, it was Nixon, all right. And so I got this telegram from the White House, and you should have seen her face. You know, she was like, yeah, all these years struggling with you. Now, and then the scripture at this point says, why is your lama so pleased? Why do they have a big, dumb smile on their face? And they're so happy with you right now because finally you're meditating, okay? All right? When you visualize your lama in meditation, they always have a big smile because you're not out eating a big breakfast at Good Egg or, you know, you're not out watching a movie or you're not out wasting your time. You are meditating. So they're like, yes, okay? Just before you meditate, you're supposed to picture your teachers like, good job! You got on your mat. You got on your meditation cushion. I love you. Okay, like that. You're required to think that. Okay, all right. That's a big part of the preparation. All right. Okay. I too am overwhelmed with devotion just thinking of the fine qualities and the kindness of everyone here in the garden. Okay. So you picture the most important people in your life, the people who have been most kind to you, who have helped you the most, and that's a karma garden. So include them in the picture. Okay? Is this meditation? No, this is preparation for meditation. Is this an Olympic race? No, it's warming up before the race. Okay? Can you run an Olympic race without warming up? I don't think so. Okay? And you can't do meditation without warming up your heart. That's what we're doing. Okay? So we've got the picture right, and next we're going to take shelter. We're going to warm up our heart for meditation with a practice which is called taking shelter. And we'll do that after the break. Okay, we'll start. We're on verse number 19. So before we go into a meditation, to prepare our hearts, we think these thoughts to ourselves. And here we go. Now I, okay, the now I is a translation of Tibetan Dena, okay, and it means now we're shifting subjects, okay, now I, okay, now, I and every living creature. Can you put up, please, the image for, I think it's 20. Yeah. I and every living creature, every one of them, my own mother, have already suffered here in the cycle of life in general, for time with no beginning. And more particularly, we have each already been through a million kinds of pain in the three realms of misery. So, we're supposed to, before we meditate, we're supposed to, what do you call it? Acknowledge that life is painful, okay? And that there's a reason to meditate, alright? The ultimate reason for meditating is to help ourselves and other people get out of pain. But to do that, you have to admit to yourself that life is painful, okay? And I don't know, I always wonder if there's some rich lady in the world who hasn't had anything bad go bad yet, like they got to 30 or 35 or 40 and nothing bad ever happened to them. But as I get older, I don't think there is such a person. Even if you have a lot of money, you know, something goes wrong or you see a terrible death of someone near to you, or this is very common, okay? I chose this photo for the meditation song. That's my own interpretation. You can do your own, okay? This, to me, this photo is, it summarizes life for me. And I first saw this photo, I don't know, I think I was 20 years old, and I saw it in a book somewhere, and I never forgot it. So this is a very beautiful young lady. I don't know the story. She's well-dressed. She has gloves on. She has her makeup. Her face is beautifully done. She has her 1950s stockings on, high-quality blouse and skirt, and she went up to the top of the Empire State Building and jumped off. And she landed on a car, and she crushed the car, and she died. And it looks like she's sleeping, and it looks like the metal of the car is almost a sheets, you know, like crumpled sheets. But and I don't know the story, and I think I don't want to know the story, because I think of it in my own way. I don't need to know her story. I can tell you her story. She was happy. She had everything. She was comfortable. She was good looking. And I imagine she was successful, but she found life too much. My own brother killed himself also, so I think about it a lot, you know. What is it about life which is so overwhelming and so painful that people would, that a nice normal person would jump off the Empire State Building, you know? And in this tradition of meditation, before you meditate, you must acknowledge how things are. And the way things are, we'll go through it right now. Next page, or, well, basically, let's put it simply, even if you can not have financial difficulties, even if you don't get serious health problems, even if your relationships are all smooth and cheerful, which I don't know anyone like that exactly, well, maybe, then still you have to lose everything, okay? Most people work for their whole life. You know, they have a career. They build up a business, or they build up a job, and they build up a family. If you're lucky, you can buy some property, build a house, have kids. And then that's a successful life. That's about the best it can be. You become financially, what do you call it, independent or strong. You have a home, you have a good family, and then you die. And then they die, okay? And then the house is sold. And I don't know, in my mother's case, who we lived half an hour from here, okay? We grew up half an hour from here. She worked her whole life. She was a school teacher. And she finally bought her own house, $15,000, I remember. And they built it. It was Northern and 19th Avenue, which at that time was the edge of the city. And she bought her house. And, you know, she did the American dream. Then she died. And we sold the house within 6 months. We tried to keep it and rent it, and it didn't work, and we sold it. Then we spent the money. And that was the end of it. Her whole life's work, you know, I don't know, 30 years of work, was gone in 6 months, okay? So this is our life, okay? This is our life. That's the story of your life. It left untended, your life will drain away and you will die. And all the things you've done will also disappear. And what meaning is... That's if everything goes well and it never goes well. Okay. Usually you have some financial disaster in your life, or relationship disaster, or health disaster. Okay. Life is painful. We should recognize that, and we should admit it, and we shouldn't pretend, and we shouldn't avoid. I spent a long time on the internet trying to find a picture of a dead body, and I couldn't. They had like killings and drug dealers shot, or, you know, famous people assassinated, but just a picture of anybody who died, it's very difficult to find a photo on. It's really weird. People don't want to think about that, okay? In this tradition of meditation and spiritual development, it's important, first of all, to acknowledge and to admit that life is dangerous and painful. Because then you can really help other people. Then you are free to address the bigger problems of life, okay? Working is good, making money is good, having a family is good, eating good restaurants is, I like it. But we also have to take care of the bigger questions in life, okay? Because they will, if you don't, they will hurt you. They will always hurt you, okay? Secondly, let's go on. Still though it is difficult, verse 21, page 16. Still though it is a difficult thing to say how deep this pain will continue to go, how far its edge can spread. So you've had problems in your life. But there will be more, okay? There will be more. And as you get older, and as things start to fall apart in your body and things like that, you will see more pain than you have seen so far. Okay, that's the nature of the life. Okay, and we believe that it continues after you die. So you can, you know, maybe you draw a little comfort from the idea that it will naturally end in a certain amount of time, but according to our belief, it doesn't. It goes on. After you die, it goes on. Okay, and so this one time, I have attained the body of a human, a perfect body, a perfect opportunity, impossible to find, but once found, capable of great things. So, well, let's go a little more. And this one time, I have met with the priceless teachings of a Buddha, impossible to find. So in our tradition, the first mental warm-up for meditation, it's called the marriage of fear and faith. Okay, the marriage of fear and faith. All right. Fear means what? Life is painful, and if you haven't had major troubles yet, they're on their way. Okay, something in your body will fail. You will have a bump somewhere, or your eyes will fail, or your ears will fail, and then something will come. Your body, inside your body right now, lay already the seeds for the destruction of your life. And how that will happen is not going to be easy. Something very painful and something very depressing will happen to each of us. The body's nature is that inside the skin now is something that will kill you, and the process will be painful. And the process of leaving and losing everything is very, very painful. Okay, we have that already. That's the fear half. Okay, what's the faith half? The faith half is very, very profound. Okay, these teachings, what we do, our business, our product of these teachings, is a path which it is claimed can save you from that. Okay, it is claimed in our tradition that if you follow the practices well, you don't have to go through those things. Your body will change into light. You will become an angel. It's possible. Okay, these teachings are designed to do that. So really, according to our belief, you always... What's that Robert Frost poem? I came to a path... Two paths, right? I forget how it goes. Path less... I was going to a forest and I came to a split in the path. And one side was well-worn and looked safe. And the other side looked a little like an adventure. And I went for the adventure path, you know. Maybe I'm going to get scratched a little bit, or it's going to be unexpected, but I'd rather do that one. So in a way, you are always at a crossroads in your life, okay? You can go on with a, quote, normal life. You can do your career. You can try to buy property. You can try to have a family. You can try to be happy with only those things, okay? And in the end, it will end, and your body will kill you. Your body will kill you, and you will lose everything that you spent your life. It's depressing how fast it dissolves after you're dead. It might not take a week for everything you assembled to disassemble. You can take that path, and everyone's going that way. You know, in Phoenix there are 5 million people. Tonight there are 50 people here. One out of 100,000 is here. The rest are doing something else. That's the well-worn path, and it leads to... My mom's house was sold in 6 months and everything was lost. All her life's work was lost in 6 months. Or you can take this other less... What do you call it? The path less...
Less traveled.
Less traveled, which it is claimed leads to a state where you are enlightened and your body is made of light and you are able to help countless beings. Not just in this world, but in many worlds which you cannot see right now. You can reach a place where you can serve countless living creatures in worlds that you have no dream of right now. You cannot even imagine them. Okay? So you have a choice. You know, that's the faith part. The road everyone else is taking is the fear part, okay? It's scary. It leads to destruction. There's obviously no solution that way. I don't think so. I mean, you just get old and die and your stuff gets sold. And that's the end of the story. This path, it is claimed. You can have faith. You can have hope. Path of hope, path of fear. understanding that the left-hand path or the other path is frightening allows you to take this path of hope, a new path of hope, okay? Is that hope for real? Does it really work? You have to try it. I believe you have to try it, you know? At least, you know what I used to say to myself when I was young and I first went in the monastery? I said, you know, at least I'm taking a shot. You know, at least I'm trying to do something more than just eat, sleep, and die. You know, in 20 years I may decide it didn't work out, but I would rather do that than quietly die. You know, let me at least try something. It sounds like this might be a real path. So, I don't have anything to lose. See what I mean? If there's a 10% that works, it's logical to try. Rather than just simply quietly die, get old and die. Okay, so, and as you learn more, you learn that this path is a very valid path, and it does work. And in your meditations, you can confirm that. So, that process of recognizing the danger and of choosing a possible hope is called taking refuge. In Buddhism, it's called taking refuge or shelter. You don't go for protection to somebody unless those two conditions are present. Number one, there's some kind of danger. Number two, you believe they can help you. And that's the two requirements for seeking protection, seeking a path which can protect you. Okay? Got it? Whew. So that's the first of the two warm-ups for meditation. It is represented on the next page, 18, by the two girls under an umbrella. Okay? They have some protection, okay? Refuge, going for shelter. Just think of the two girls under the umbrella, okay? They have an umbrella. They are protected, right? You can be protected by these practices, I believe. You can be protected from death, sickness, old age, if you learn these practices, okay? They become an umbrella for you in the rainfall of life, okay? Otherwise, you're going to get wet. Okay, got it? So, I tried to select images in the text that you would always remember. That I think the image of the lady on the car you will never forget. And if you do your meditation every morning, if you use this book every morning, I want you to see that picture 500 times on 500 different days. And I want you to think about, why did a beautiful, young, healthy, well-dressed person decide to try to leave this life? Okay, what was it? What did she know? Maybe she was right. I often think that about my brother. He shot himself. And then he was so intelligent, super intelligent. And then I think, maybe he just thought it out carefully and saw there's no way, you know, there's no future here. He didn't want to go through the thing of collecting things and then die and have the kids sell them, you know, in 6 months. You see? So I want you to think about that. You cannot make progress in this path without admitting the truth about life, that it's suffering and it will end in suffering. To go through relationships which break up, to have the stress of a job and losing the job, or the fear of losing your partner or your children or your parents. This is pretty much the story of life, okay? If there's a possible way out, I say it's worth it to try, okay? And that's the umbrella. That's the meaning of the umbrella. So in this tradition, you don't start a meditation without thinking about the reality of life, okay? Because that motivates you to meditate. Okay, people tell me they don't have time to meditate. That's like saying I don't have time to eat. You know, it's not true. You have to eat or you will die. Okay, and if you don't meditate, you will die the other way. Okay, and I'm not trying to scare you. I'm just trying to give you some hope. The people who are not in this room are kidding themselves, in my opinion, okay? They're just kidding themselves. They are purposely ignoring what's obvious because it's too painful to admit it, that this is how it's all going to end. Okay? Don't be depressed. We're going to get out of it. All right. Now, one last thing, and then I think I would like to take comments or questions. All right? Comments on what? How you'd like to see something interpreted so far. I just want your ideas. I want you to start thinking. And then questions about anything, about your life, or advanced Buddhist philosophy, or the last person who yelled at you, other things, okay? Anything, all right? So let's do one little piece and then we'll go on. I'll read the next piece. I think we stopped at verse 24. I must work then from this one moment on to reach enlightenment, perfect, complete, ultimate freedom, free of all the pain of this endless circle. And if I fail, then there is no choice, one more time through a life of pain. And this time it could be in the hells, as an animal, or a spirit driven by craving. This is a reference to what Buddhists believe happened to you after you die, okay? And I'm not asking you to believe in it, and I'm not trying to sell it to you. We believe that your mind does not stop when the body stops. That it's connected to the body, but it has an independent existence. And it will continue after the body dies. I'm not trying to prove that tonight, but it's possible, right? Why does Hamlet stay his hand? And by something put an end to it. He has a knife in his hand, he's thinking to kill himself. And he says, he's like, yeah, I could stop it all right now. But, what's he say after that? And perforce to dream, I think. Perchance to dream, meaning what? Maybe it will continue. Maybe the dream will continue after I kill myself. He stops. He's a chicken, right? He can't take life. But when he gets to taking his life, I mean, he can't bear life. But when he gets to taking his life, he chickens out again. Why? He says, maybe it will continue, okay? Maybe it will go on. So I'm not trying to prove that to you tonight. But of course, there's certain odds that it's true that you go on. Okay? In the Buddhist opinion, the fact that you're here proves it goes on. But I'm not trying to convince you of that. Suffice to say that it's possible that the pain continues after you die. Suffice to say that suicide is a foolish thing to do, because if you're alive, you can try to transform your body. If you die, you go back to... You may go to another place where you don't have that chance. Okay? Possible. And so the beings here before me, my Lama and the Three Jewels, possess the power to protect me from this pain. At this point in the meditation preparation, you are supposed to imagine that right behind you are your mother and your father. They are sitting right here. You can't see them. They're out of your, what do you call it, peripheral vision, but they are, oops, sorry, Dad. They are sitting right behind you. And behind them is a crowd of people that stretches to the horizon. Okay? Billions of beings sitting behind them. You are at the apex. You are at the front of a group of millions of people sitting with you in meditation. Okay? And you are up in the front, and your mom and dad are here, and all the other ones are behind you. And those humans represent all the creatures of this planet, human or not. Fish, birds, bugs, javelina, codamundis, rattlesnakes. Okay? in their outer form, they are human in this meditation, but they represent all the creatures of this planet, human or animal, okay? Fish, birds, all in a human form, okay? And all suffering, all suffering, all of them doomed to die, all of them doomed to get old, all of them already having things inside their body that will kill them, okay? Billions of suffering people, okay, creatures. And they're like all hoping that you're going to do something. You see, no pressure, okay? and your dad and mom who served you so well, they're the first ones. You know, they're the ones who are counting on you the most, and then behind them are the rest of them, okay? So they're all there. So when you get to verse 27, and it doesn't say it in the verse, and you should have this in your notes at the end of your copy, you are sitting in it, you are at the front of a huge triangle of all the creatures in the world, and they are depending on you. Okay? You are the one who's in a situation where you could help. You have some kind of crazy path that might help, because the choice is nothing. There are no other choices, okay? All right. Verse 27. I too then must become a Buddha, a completely enlightened being for the sake of every living, single living creature, each one my own mother, okay? And I'll finish in 2 minutes and we'll go. We'll get your suggestions for the performance, but that's why I put the other photo on page, what is it, 18? And it's a child drinking from their mother's breast, okay? And this reflects a Buddhist teaching that your mind, your spirit, your soul, if you want to call it your soul, has been here for millions of lifetimes. You have passed through this world millions of times and other worlds. And you have lived countless lives as countless beings. I always joke around and say, you've been Miss America. Every guy in this room, you've been Miss America like a zillion times. You've also been President of the United States zillions of times. You've also been Hitler zillions of times and killed 6 million people. You've done everything countless times. Okay? It's true. I'm not trying to freak you out. I have reason to believe it. Someday if you meditate well, you will see it. I believe that. But hear it. At least hear it. You have been here millions of times. And you have been everything. And you've done every kind thing and you've done every cruel thing. Countless times. Okay? And you and I have been everything to each other countless times. And I have drunk milk from your breast. And you have drunk milk from my breast countless times, okay? And that's true of every person you ever met and every animal you ever petted and every bug you ever smashed on your windshield, okay? They fed you from their own breast and they sustained your life and took care of you. And you did them also, okay? So I want you, whenever you meditate, if you don't have time to read this whole ritual, which I understand, it's true. Very few of us have that kind of time. Maybe do it once a week or something on Saturday or Sunday. But at least, you know what you could do? Flip through and look at the photos. And then meditate. Okay? That's an easy way. And I think it's valid. You know, to me, the photo of the child is worth, you know, 100 Tibetan verses, you know. The photo's enough to remind me I drank milk from the breast of the last insect that smashed into my windshield. Okay? I will remember. I will honor that. Okay? And as I mentioned on this last weekend, for those who weren't there, this is a great meditation when you're having trouble with somebody. Okay? Someone, your ex, whatever it was, boyfriend or girlfriend, wife, husband, business partner. Okay? Anyone that you have a really difficult, bitter relationship with, I advise you during meditation to attempt a visualization of you drinking from their breast, okay? Even if they were a guy, okay? Because you have, and you did, okay? They bore you from their womb countless times. The person you have the most trouble with in this life right now, you know, usually it's ex something. They have breastfed you countless times. In the moment you visualize that, it's very hard to dislike them the way you did before that. Okay? It's very difficult to dislike a person 100% if you can pretend that you drank milk from their breast. Okay? Try. I try it. It worked for me. I only hate them 95% now. Okay? All right. I'm just kidding. I don't hate people. All right. I'd like to stop there tonight, okay? You know the pictures now. You have to just flip through the photos sometime. The little girl is sitting correctly in meditation. The Buddha's hand is controlling the four demons. Those are all the lamas of the lineage there. The lady, she admitted what's life and she killed herself. She saw it. She confronted it and she decided to try to end it, right? We believe you don't end it, but anyway. And then the two girls have some protection against those problems. And the child at the breast means, if you're going to free yourself, you can't ignore other people. Okay? That would be like eating a big Thanksgiving dinner with 50 other people who couldn't afford it. You know? Imagine sitting in a restaurant eating a nice French meal or something, surrounded by starving people. It's not fun. You can't enjoy the dinner, okay? If you learn how to get yourself out of these problems, you can't abandon the other people who fed you at their breast in all those lifetimes, okay? It doesn't work. It doesn't work that way. Whatever problems you're going to have when the cancer takes you or starts to grow in your body, everyone has those problems. You can't fix your problem and say good luck to the rest of people on the Titanic and jump in your little boat and sail away, you know? You can't do that. It's not right, okay? You have to, if you find a path, and if you practice that path, and if it works for you, then you must share it. You can't just tell everybody else good luck, you know, under the water in the Atlantic. You know, you can't just bail out, leave other people, right? They have fed you milk. You owe them, okay? Okay. Give me a verse number and tell me what you think would be cool to do. It's not binding, okay? I'm just curious if anybody had a thought. Do you have an extra mic? Do you guys have an extra mic you can share?
Check one. Check, check.
And then we'll go home in about 10 minutes, okay? We're all tired. We had a long weekend. Very emotionally draining, powerful weekend with a lot of beautiful people. Please, you ready?
Hi.
And then Rob has to keep notes.
I don't know the verse because I don't actually have the book. So you just started speaking about the now I, the suffering of marriage of fear and faith. I just think that would be a good like play, drama.
Okay.
Sort of finding somebody realizing their fear and then finding their teacher and working through that.
Cool. A little vignette, theatrical vignette, in which someone expresses their fears and then finds a teacher. Okay, I like it. The director is taking notes. No kidding. Okay, somebody else. Come. Bertha has one.
I'm sorry. On verse 7, you know, the preliminaries, and just act like in a play, each one of them.
You mean the... Say again, how?
Okay, on verse 7, you know, mm-hmm. the preliminaries, the, yeah. You know, straighten up the... So each one of them, act them out as a, in a play.
Okay.
Like
the Lama on the throne? And like that?
Yeah, each.
Okay. Okay.
You know, just act each one of them.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Next. Don't be shy. Help. By the way, this week it's not a lama standing up here teaching. It's a group thing. And you gotta come up with some cool stuff.
Right. I think it would be cool to act out the four distractions and the overcoming of them. Like you could have someone sitting in meditation and, you know, being tempted by beautiful women or money or and things like that. That would be
the four demons.
Have them show that. That would be good.
Cool. A small theatrical few minute piece in which a meditator overcomes the four demons one by one. Cool. Yeah. By the way, I mean, the advice I got from my teachers about this idea was they pointed out that there would be no audience. You know, like we are, the plan is that we together we make something that we do in this room. We perform it in this room for the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas who are invisible. I like to think of them hovering up near the ceiling. You know, but we are going to do an act of faith. We're going to do a performance for people that we can't see. You know, and each one of us will do something, not for the people, but for the enlightened beings. And they're like sitting there and saying, oh, I like that song. I have to pick that one up on iTunes, okay? All right? That's the... And then my teacher said, we're going to drop our idea that people are watching me. And I have to, I'm performing. It's between us and God. You know, each person is performing for God or Buddha or whatever you want to say. Like, I'm not going to be nervous in my song or my piece because I'm not doing it for that. I'm not thinking about how I look to you. It's between me and these divine beings. And it's an offering. And so there shouldn't be any nervousness or shyness. Okay, next.
I had a dream this morning, and one of my brothers, he was holding me, and I was supposed to relax completely. So he was taking me through some motions as though we were in the water, but I just had to completely let go and relax, even to the point I was like drooling on my shirt, and I just trusted him, so I completely relaxed, and then when he let me go, I did this some kind of dance where I just didn't have any joints, or I don't know, there was some kind of thing where I could just completely move with perfect freedom. And so I thought that would be good for doing this verse 27 and 28. Because I thought that once he did that to me, I wanted to do that to other people.
Okay.
And so here it says, I too then must become a Buddha, completely enlightened being for the sake of every single living creature, my mother. To help me do it, I take my shelter now in my lama and in the triple gem. So maybe some kind of dance for that. Where someone is holding, like your teacher is holding you, and then you become liberated and you can help other people.
Oh, that's nice. Nice image. Yeah. A dance where your teacher is... I think, from your description, I'm thinking of the Pieta statue, or she's holding her Christ, or just like supporting them, and then suddenly he's free, or something like that. And then he can help other people, or she can help other people. Anyone else?
This was verse 24. I was sort of picturing, you know, a stage of people in confusion, and one by one, you know, and they're all running from something, and then one by one they sort of take the point in the beginning of the pyramid of people in front, but when they're at the front, they sort of, you know, yeah, and they, I'm doing it, and they take turns though being that person in the front. There's not just one person. So they all take turns and they show their expression.
Cool. Cool. Hagunti. I get your picture. Like, it'd be nice on a stage to have the pyramid, and the person in front is somehow, to me, they'd be more calm than the rest. Like, they'd be somehow found peace, and the others are still agitated, and then they might rotate, and then one on the different side of the triangle comes out to the front, and that person has peace, but the people behind them don't, or something like that. Like, they're an example. Yeah.
This came...
Excuse me. Yes. But the triangle would rotate, and there'd be a new person at the head again. Yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah.
I don't know where the verse is, but it came to me while you were teaching tonight. There's a poem by Pablo Neruda, and it's about where poetry came from. So in my mind, I kept imagining reading that poem, but next to me is maybe one of the... someone speaking Spanish... the line, kind of going line for line, and it's sort of this idea that he wasn't sure where poetry came from. He sort of turned the corner, and it just sort of came out of nowhere and hit him. And so I felt like it was somewhere in the going for shelter part, about using that as my interpretation of shelter.
Cool.
As an individual poem.
Yeah. By the way, the things we create don't have to be our own. You could play a recorded song by someone else that you think is good in that place. You're my wonderwall. That song's in my head because we heard it in yoga the other day, and I think it's some kind of refuge song. You're my shelter, you see. So you could choose a song that already exists and just play it for us, okay? Or like that, you could use a piece of video. I'm going to show you an important piece of video tomorrow called Harry Met Sally, and you know, other instructional videos, and you can choose. It doesn't have to be a creation. It could be something that's your favorite minute out of a movie, or your favorite song. And to me, I take my favorite song and I force it into one of the verses. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Anyone else?
Yeah, it was verse 7 and 8. I just visualized a beautiful painting of, you know, Buddha sitting on top of the moon and the sun with the lions. But kind of a, you said it was the personal lama inside that we should see in our meditation. And it was a mix between the traditional Buddha and, like, my own personal lama for me coming out. It was a nice mix between the two, and I just think it would be a beautiful painting.
Yeah, by the way, you're welcome to go out and buy some paints. You're welcome to get a canvas. You're welcome to do it on a computer and Photoshop it. You know, don't limit yourself, okay? You're welcome to paint something. Like, we're going to be taking the afternoons and doing this thing for 4 or 5 days. And you're welcome to just bring your own canvas and work on it. For the idea is that you get like 4 or 5 days to work on what you'd like to do. Okay, good. I could think you could Photoshop your teacher's face. That's what we did on page. Where is Luis? Page 18, 20. So the Buddha on page 20 is a close friend of ours, and Osiris's mom. I asked her. We asked him, and he hired her. But they photoshopped Louise's face onto the Buddha. So you could do it in photo. You could do that. That'd be great. How you see it, and then get a bunch of lion pictures off of Google Images and stick them in there. Okay. And if you need help, then you would team up with somebody else who's good at Photoshop. You see what I mean? All right. Others? Other suggestions?
When I first moved out to Diamond Mountain to support the retreat, there was a song that arose that I had thought of for many years, and it was the Beatles singing Blackbird, Blackbird singing in the dead of night.
Yeah.
And it was so powerful for me. And maybe, you know, after looking at where our life is going and we have this choice to take the other path and seek enlightenment, we could play that song.
Yeah.
You know,
like Shelter.
Take these broken wings and learn to fly. You know, take these sunken eyes and learn to see.
I think segues are going to be a big deal in this attempt. I think they're going to be important. The transitions are going to be difficult. Like somebody's going to dance something, and the next person has to do a poem. And then what do you do between? I don't want it to just stop and we're all sitting around and, you know, waiting for the next thing. It would be nice to have songs like that to come up as the transition to the next theater piece or next dance or the next song, a recorded song. That could be a way to achieve the transitions, I think, that make it look less amateur, because we're all amateurs. Anyone else have an idea? We'll do like 3-4 more minutes, and then I think most of us are really tired for the weekend, so we can go get some sleep.
I think, why is it feeding back? For the 4 modes of a teacher, I'm not sure what verse that was, but
it was the hands.
Oh, that's right.
And your homework is to figure out how it applies.
Yeah. We could do something like it's still pretty vague to me, but like one musical piece that goes through the 4 modes, or 4 different musical pieces together, or some music video compiled that really conveys the different modes.
Yeah, good. I was thinking you could take famous scenes from movies. I don't know. Kung Fu Panda. No. Yeah. Okay. I like that idea. I've always thought that to do the 4 modes on a stage or in music, it'd be really powerful. The first song is very peaceful, and then it gets expansive, and then it gets powerful, and then it gets severe, you know, and that'd be great. You may have noticed that these exercises are going to drill the ideas into your mind. If you have to sit there for 12 hours and choose the music and do the segues in the music, you're never going to forget the 4 modes when it comes time to teach it to somebody. Okay? Next, anyone else? Paulino.
Okay, so in the refuge part, there's a picture with these 2 girls under an umbrella.
Yeah.
I was pictured them maybe in a dance, someone with an umbrella and people around, maybe sick or suffering, and we can put as much people as we can under an umbrella, dancing, and maybe we can also use the Rihanna song, but I don't know exactly what it says, but okay.
Umbrella. Yeah, it's a different generation, but I like what I heard from you was that maybe this on the stage starts with a bunch of people suffering. Some person looks sick, some person maybe even dead, some person sad because they lost their boyfriend or something on the stage. And then you show up or somebody with an umbrella and you take the first person and you put the umbrella over. And then suddenly they get cured and they're under the umbrella with you. And then 2 of you go to the next person and, you know, and then at the end everyone's under the umbrella and they're all giggly. You know, yeah, I like it. Something like that. If you see, if you perform in that piece or you write that piece, you design that piece, you'll never forget the idea of refuge. You see, that's the point of doing a show. Okay. One more, and then let's go home. No. Nobody else wants to do anything. Dennis, let's go.
So there's this play, Convergence, that just came out, and it was about the a sweat lodge incident that kind of happened.
It's a play?
Well, it's a it was a take from it. Like they took some of the ideas of the incident and memory of it.
Yeah.
So it was part of it was about the a student and their teacher, and the teacher asked the student about faith and like things about their faith, and demanded that that they look into their eyes while they were doing it. So whenever this person slipped, like the teacher got really fierce. Maybe we can steal some of that.
Yeah. Okay. Material.
Cool. All right, then. Let's go home. We have a tradition in our lineage that at the end of the evening, because we've made so much good karma together, that we give the karma away to other people. So there's a little weird thing you do with your hands. If you know it, you can do it. If you don't know it, you can just go like this with me. And I'm going to ask Venerable Phil, who has a good singing voice and is going to lead his chorus later in something, to please do this prayer.
Sa-shi.